Sober on Purpose is the podcast that takes you beyond clean to fulfilling your dreams. Other programs get you sober. We ask, what's next? Come thrive with us.
Hello, Sober on Purpose. This is Tanya Joya back with another wonderful guest, Dave Albin, who has been with Tony Robbins, who now runs his own Firework Adventures studio, was called by Google. We were just laughing about that before. He's going to make you laugh and possibly make you cry. We connected because he stepped into this because of a late night story. Those late night infomercials got old Dave, and I'll just let him tell you the rest on how he moved into his experience with Tony Robbins and what we talk about all the time, how to support your loved ones in addiction.
Love it. Well, thanks, Tanya. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here, and hopefully I can say something that to give somebody some encouragement and some knowledge and some wisdom to deal with the things that we have to deal with when we're dealing with drug addicts and alcoholics or any other addiction for that matter. Hell, it could be chocolate chip cookies.
It's a shame, but they really could be chocolate chip cookies. So you were just regaling me with a story of how you found Tony was after your sobriety, and you were.
I was. Well, I'd just gotten sober, actually. So when I got to AA, when I got there, of course, you know, I was coming in fast, and I was coming in wet, no doubt about it. I arrived at the doors of AA on June 8th of 1988, grossly addicted to heroin, cocaine, alcohol. Of course, I was smoking cigarettes, and I jokingly say, you know, chocolate chip cookies, because I was pretty much addicted to anything that made me feel good. Or I put it another way, I was addicted to anything that I could use to avoid pain or try to gain pleasure. And of course, right, and then alcohol and drugs kind of did that for a while, and then one day that escapes you and you realize you're not doing both. And yeah, that day was the turning point for me. I had hit threshold. I was definitely sick and tired of being sick and tired. And, you know, you're in a lot of pain. I mean, I was in a lot of physical and emotional pain. And I was married to a woman who had three kids. They were my stepkids. And that day I said, that's it. I'm done. I'm out. I am not doing this anymore. Mm-hmm. And so my first thought was to just go ahead and put a bullet in my head. Well, that was the chicken way out for me, and I knew it. And I knew that if I did that and pulled the triggers, those three kids upstairs that I was a stepfather, they'd suffer immensely. I'm killing them too. And that's not right. You can't do that. You got to figure out another way. Don't be such a, you know what? And then what was really interesting, Tanya, is that the next thing I remember thinking is that, well, call Alcoholics Anonymous. But the problem with that is I didn't know who Alcoholics Anonymous was. Not in that moment.
But wait, this is what most family wants to hear, that their loved one is saying to themselves, okay, I don't want to hurt the people who love me.
Right.
And I have kind of an idea of what to do. How did you even get an idea that there was such a group of Alcoholics Anonymous or any kind of support group?
You know, the two biggest mysteries in the world are where do elephants go to die? And where did that thought come from? I don't know. I just don't. I just know that it was there. You know, I mean, I remember also, you know, I had the pistol out. I had it loaded. And I remember getting mad at my stepkids because it was their fault that I wasn't going to kill myself. Right? That's how insidious that is. Maybe that'll help some of your listeners there, right? And, you know, and I'm struggling with that. But I did have, you know, it did come down to a moment of compassion. Literally, because I remember thinking, oh my gosh, you know, the cops are coming, the morgue's coming, and the papers are going to know, and every kid in the school's going to know, and those three kids have got to deal with it. They got to clean it up, sweep it up, talk about it. And yeah, you know what? You pull that trigger, you're killing them too. So don't do that. Stop being such a self-centered jerk and figure out another way. And then again, there it was, Alcoholics Anonymous. Now that what was interesting about that as well, again, as I said, I didn't know where the thought came from, but there it was. And so I did. I called AA and I called Intergroup. And I got this wonderful lady on the phone I affectionately call her to this day. I refer to her as Madge. And Madge talked like this. Okay, so she's on the intergroup. She's answering all the calls. And she probably smoked 3 packs of Pall Mall non-filtered cigarettes a day. And that's mm-hmm. why her, but man, did Madge run me through the ringer. She was in my face. I mean, she wanted to know, are you serious? Will you get sober? Because basically she's the gatekeeper, right? Mm-hmm. So she's the one responsible for calling somebody to come pick me up. And so mm-hmm. she's the one who has to pull the trigger on that, so to speak. And so she was in my face. So apparently I gave her enough information for her to go ahead and do that. And she made a phone call. And the next thing I know, this wonderful man named Lauren came and pulled up in front of my house to pick me up. And so he drove me to an all men's group of Alcoholics Anonymous in Fairfax, Virginia. And he stayed with me for 4 meetings that day, a 12:30, a 4:30, a 6:30, and an 8:30 meeting. Wow. Perfect stranger. This guy didn't owe me anything, nothing, but he wouldn't leave my side. And so when I got to AA that first day, they took a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and all the guys signed it. So they wrote at the top of the book, before you take that first drink, call one of us. And they just put their first name, no last names, and their phone number, and handed me the book. Well, I went home that night, and somehow I got through the night without taking a drink. Well, at 8 o'clock.
Wait, let's back up one step. You don't have to be sober to show up in an AA meeting. You just can't drink in it.
Well, what they say is the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. Now, if you get at my men's group, if you would have got caught drinking on premise, oh, we would have escorted you off the property.
But you were not. So I'm going to guess you were not sober when you showed up. There was a blood alcohol content or something in your body.
Oh, heck yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So we don't have to get, you know, nobody has to get clean or get themselves straightened up to show up at an AA meeting. You just can't do it on site.
Yeah. Cause you know, alcoholics will make up this thing. Well, I got to go get my tuxedo cleaned. And then once I get that back, I'll put that on and then I'll go to, you know what I mean? We're always looking for a way not to do it. We come up with some of the most bizarre, weird bunch of nonsense. You know, just get your happy butt in the car with the guy and let him get you over there. Cause that's where I was. I knew mm-hmm. that I was, you know, I'd already played with the pistol twice that morning. So I was willing to go see what, you know, these guys would tell me. And then, so I went home that night and miraculously I didn't take a drink or a drug. And then at 8 o'clock in the morning, my phone rings and it's John from AA. And so John's like, "Hey Dave, good morning. It's John from AA. How you doing this morning?" And I'm like, "How do you think I'm doing? I want to kill somebody. You know, and I might start with you, pal." And he's like, yeah, I hear you. Yeah, don't worry about it. Hey, listen, I know where you live. I was in the meeting last night. I know exactly where you live. You're right around the corner from me. Let's do this. Let me come pick you up. Let's go to breakfast. Let's hang out a little bit, and I'll take you to a meeting today.
Mm-hmm.
How do you put into words what some strange, and I was serious. I was like, you know, I might start with you. I mean, you know, I was like, mm-hmm. you know, I was threatening. I was angry. I was completely out of my mind. And yet there he was, 8 o'clock in the morning, checking in on me. Cause they knew mm-hmm. I was bad. That, you know, they're like, you know, we know once you've been in AA for a while, you know, when a really nasty wet one walks through the door or crawls mm-hmm. through the door in this case. And so he did. He came and got me, went to breakfast, and he took me back, and I went to meetings, and, you know, they started presenting me the package deal. You know, don't drink one day at a time. Pray, whether you believe in God or not, we don't care. Just pray to a power greater than you. Mm-hmm. We don't care whether mm-hmm. you believe in God or not. It doesn't matter. You just have to come to realize, you know, that's the first step. You have to admit you're powerless, and you have to, you know, come to the realization that there's a power greater than you that can restore you to sanity. And so once you incorporate that, And then you start working the steps and, you know, you start getting involved and you get involved with either, you know, the indoor or the outdoor maintenance or, you know, whatever was going on. This particular men's group was sitting on a house on 5 acres. So we had to keep the inside clean. We had to keep the outside clean and mow the grass and all these kinds of things. So, so one day turned into two and two, excuse me, turned into a month. And then, you know, once I got to a month, you know, they gave me a chip and it said 30 days. Then I got one for 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, and 1 year. And then I just picked up one here on June 8th here of this year that has the Roman numeral 35. So 35
wow.
years.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, right? Can we back up just a second, Dave? What brought you to the point that you have the gun in one hand and you're searching for the AA number in the other hand? How did you get there?
I drank and used a lot of drugs.
but there had to be a tipping point somewhere.
Well, that was it. I don't know. It was just that morning. I hurt so bad. I was in so much physical and emotional pain, spiritual mm-hmm. pain. You know, I'd been lying to myself about everything. I was fearful of everything. Mm-hmm. You know, I was the kind of drunk that would be 4 o'clock in the morning. I'd be in the bathroom by myself because at that point I was living in the basement and the rest of the family was upstairs. They stayed away from me. I would be in the bathroom at 4 o'clock in the morning. And I don't mean to sound so graphic, but this is the way it was. I would be naked. I would have just woken up. You know, from crashing, you know, sleeping, if you call that sleeping. And I would have a bucket in one hand and a bottle of vodka in the other. And mm-hmm. now I have to get enough vodka in my system to stop shaking because mm-hmm. I'm shaking so bad. Mm-hmm. I've got tremors. And so, mm-hmm. you know, you drink a little vodka and, you know, you'd spit it up, hence the bucket. Try it again, throw it up, drink it, throw it up. And then eventually all of a sudden you'd get it and it would stay down and you'd mm-hmm. go from shaking like this to shaking like this. It would slow down. And then mm-hmm. you get another shot of vodka down and then it got a little better and then it got a little better. And then eventually you'd stop shaking and you'd start to feel what you perceive to be normal. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden I'd get to this point, right? And I'd say to myself, okay, yeah, there we go. Ah, yeah, that's not so bad. What's not so bad that you're naked in a bathroom at 4 o'clock in the morning with a bucket and a bottle of vodka trying to drink your way to stop the shakes? That's not so bad. Well, I go into the graphics of that because so people that don't understand alcoholism have an idea what that's like.
Mm-hmm.
We'll just make things up to go, yeah, it's not so bad. Well, of course it is. It's horrible. It's disgusting. It's no way for any human on earth to live their life.
Well, and that's what we work with families about is the addiction is the solution. It's the solution to the spiritual, mental, and physical pain until it isn't. And then you and I both know that the big book says it's the poor fellow who's unable to be honest with themselves, who does not make it out. So somewhere in that process, Dave, you got honest with yourself.
Yeah. Because you have to. Because I knew that I wasn't doing a very good job. You know, and I think what's beautiful about that moment for any alcoholic who finally says, I need help. Mm-hmm. It's literally one of the most intelligent things any human can enact upon themselves. I don't care whether you're an alcoholic or not. Asking mm-hmm. for help is a beautiful thing because number one, it helps the person that's helping you and it's helping you. And so, you know, we look around the world, that's not hard to understand, right? Because at the end of the day, if you help enough people get what they want in life, typically you'll always get what you want. So it's
little
kind of
Zig Ziglar there.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of a universal code. Yeah, it's a little zig going on there.
Well, so you had already moved to the basement. you're still in the house. This is a lot of what the families deal with is, do we throw them out? Do we do this? Do we do that? You're still in the house. What was, describe the relationship. You already described, I'm not going to do it because I don't want these stepkids to have to clean up the mess. So you had some compassion, but describe what the relationship was between you and family at that point.
Well, they loved me. I had taken pretty good care of them. Their father had abandoned them. And so I stepped in and helped, you know, keep a roof over their head and food on the table and all that. And, you know, I tried really hard. I mean, I married the woman. Okay. I know this will come as a huge surprise, but she was a bartender. So, <Yeah. laughs> okay. Well, hey, if you're an alcoholic, who do I want to have as a life partner? Let's see. Oh, there we go. Let's choose her. One of my favorite bars to hang out in, you know, and her having three kids. I literally thought, you know, if I marry this woman and she has three kids, maybe that'll slow me down.
I mean,
literally, right? And so now I did for like a week. And then it's, you know, it's right back to the same thing, because as we know, alcoholism is cunning, baffling, powerful. And, you know, and without help, it's too much for us. So,
well, and the key was another person or persons was not going to solve it. You had to decide to solve it.
All right. Yeah, exactly.
They couldn't step in, and even your responsibility for them was not going to keep you from a behavior that was the solution at the moment.
Right. In fact, the summer before June 8th of 88, when the kids got out of school, that particular summer, I had a 32-foot Pace Aero motorhome. And when they got out of school that day, I said, hey, kids, you want to go to King's Dominion? I was in Northern Virginia. And they're like, oh, yeah, Dad, let's go. So we go to King's Dominion. Well, when you walk in King's Dominion to the left, there's a Mexican restaurant. And it's the only place in the park that sells alcohol. Well, there was a brand new bottle of Grand Marnier, hadn't even been opened. And I remember going there, and they didn't open until 11:30, which annoyed me. But once I went in there, there I was, you know, now I'm feeling very responsible. Like I'm a good stepdad. I'm in there in that Mexican restaurant and I'm drinking like a fish, but they're in an amusement park having fun. Look at me. Mm-hmm. I'm a good dad. Right. Mm-hmm. And so of course, you know, I drank the whole bottle plus quite a bit of other alcohol that day. And so that night, I can't navigate this big RV, you know, back down 95 home. So we got a hotel. Well, I woke up the next morning and I said, hey, kids, we're only about an hour or so from Busch Gardens. And they're like, really, Dad? Let's go. Well, guess what you do at Busch Gardens? First thing, take the
Absolutely.
Tour. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And what do they do when you get on the tour? They have a free sample for you.
Sure.
Back to Busch Gardens is the only place I ever landed where I knew, you know, if I live here, I'll never run out of beer.
There you go.
So there I was. Same thing. Kids having fun, feeling responsible, drank myself into submission, got a hotel. I woke up the next morning and said, hey, kids, we're only a couple of hours from Virginia Beach.
Boom. Oh, no. Off you go.
off to the beach we go. Now, this is alcoholic thinking, so I want to go into some detail here so that the listeners have an idea of, you know, why alcoholics think and do the things they do. So there I was again, acting responsible. And then woke up, you know, one morning and said, hey, we're only a couple of hours from Myrtle Beach. And so, you know, here we go on to Myrtle Beach. And then, you know, we're only a couple of hours away from Florida. And next thing, you know, we're in St. Augustine and we're wake up.
Oh,
one
my
morning,
goodness.
We're only an hour from, you know, not Fort Lauderdale, but Daytona Beach, you know, in St. Augustine, I could drive the motorhome out on the beach and the kids could go in the surf and play. I'm sitting there with the motorhome on the beach, drinking like a fish, going and saying, look at me, I'm a good dad. Mm-hmm. I mean, how ridiculous is that, right? And then again, I said, we went to Daytona. I mean, I chartered a boat to go fishing with my stepson. And we went out there and we got out there and I turned to the deckhand and I said, hey, I could use a beer. And he gave me a beer and he said, I could use another one. He gave me another one. I said, I could use another one. He goes, that's all we have, sir. I went, what? He goes, you only brought two beers on a fishing trip? And he goes, yeah, sir, that's typically all we bring. I said, turn this boat around and go back to the shore. We're done. About that time, my son, my stepson caught a fish. So we brought back a fish. I mean, right? Are you getting how we think here?
Yes.
And then I woke up one morning and said, you know, we're only a couple of hours from Key West. Well, the good thing about that was I ran out of land.
You couldn't go. Cuba would be a long swim.
I'd have been in Cuba if there was a connection flight. And now, by the way, we left. It was right after the first of summer in June. Next thing I know, I got a week to get back to get the kids back to school in August.
Oh, my goodness. So not only is this kind of instant gratification thinking, the time lapse scenario, you're not pacing time at all.
No. What's that? Yeah. I have an American Express card.
Were you working?
I had some money in the bank. So, I had an American Express card. So, and I didn't even know they had platinums back then, but it was a gold card and I had plenty of room on it and I had plenty of money in the bank. And so I didn't care. I'm not looking at time. But here's where it gets really, this is the alcoholic thinking. So now I know I got to get back to Virginia to get the kids in school. So I'm literally driving this huge motorhome one night at 2 o'clock in the morning. And I've got a big gulp cup, a big giant one. And it's a White Russian, right?
Oh,
which
my.
Is vodka, Kahlua, and milk. And I used to drink those because I go, I'm getting milk, I'm getting nutrients. Right here I am rationalizing it again.
Absolutely.
And I'm drinking, I'm at that maintain level right now. I'm like drinking enough where I'm like, okay, I'm alert and all that, right? Well, there's a guy's getting on the from the on-ramp onto 95 and he looks to me like he's probably pretty intoxicated. He's swerving all over the place. So I'm a good Samaritan, right? I get on the CB radio and reported him to the Florida State Troopers. And the next thing I know, here comes a trooper. He pulls alongside of me and he points, is that the guy? And I'm like, yep, that's your boy. And he gives me a thumbs up and goes and, you know, pulls this guy over. And I've got a white Russian.
I don't know if it's just dumb luck or if you have angels or what.
Yes.
I thought you were going to tell me that guy wasn't swerving. You were swerving. But you just didn't realize it.
Nope. Ask, you know, angels or dumb luck? Yes to all of it. I had a little bit of all of it.
Wow.
And so that was really kind of the beginning of the end for me. Like we got home, obviously. I ended up selling the RV. And that's when I locked myself in the basement. Was late August, early September. And that's when I decided I was going to drink myself to death. Ha! Okay.
Well, so that was an activating event. You did all that, but it still didn't pull you out of the funk or anything that you were in.
No, I just locked myself in the basement and proceeded to drink myself to death. And so I went from like September of 1987 to June of 88. And then that morning on the 8th, when I woke up, I went, nah, this ain't working. There's got to be a much easier, faster way. And that was, you know, you want to stop the pain, pull the trigger. Because I wasn't fighting with this idea there's a heaven or hell or anything. I could care less. I just wanted the pain to stop. And I knew that if I put that bullet in my head, it would do that. And then, as you said, I had the moment of compassion.
Let's hop forward. So you've got the AA guys surrounding you. They're not letting you go.
No, they're not.
In fact, this addiction, the habits of addiction, when turned towards the good, can make great entrepreneurs. They're people who are tenacious, really talented, intelligent, all of those things. It's just a matter of turning that around. So they're hanging on to you. What's turning around in your life as you're hanging on to them?
Well, so I'm up late one night because I've got insomnia in 88, right? And there he is, Mr. Motivation, Mr. Gunthy Ranker, Mr. Infomercial himself, a young, obnoxious, loud, enthusiastic Tony Robbins, and he's selling his program. Well, mm-hmm. So, I mean, when I first saw him on the infomercial, I couldn't stand the guy. You know, he's mm-hmm. all motivated and on pot enthusiastic, and I'm not. But he said a couple things that got me. The one thing he said is, we'll do more to avoid pain than we will to gain pleasure. And I don't know what about that, Tanya. It got me. Because I'm like, that's the reason I drank. I drank to avoid pain or gain pleasure. And then eventually that goes poof, and that disappears. And you got nothing after that other than just cheap rationalizations.
Maintenance.
Right? Yeah.
And the vodka, the bucket and the bottle.
Vodka and the bucket, yeah. And then here's what really got me. He said the driving force in our lives, we make decisions out of inspiration or desperation. And I remember thinking, whoa, is he talking to me? I mean, because, you know, I'm desperate. So I bought his program. It was called Personal Power. It was a 30-day program. They sent it to you, and it came in boxes, and it came on little white things called cassette tapes. Right? To date this thing, your listeners aren't even going to know what cassette tapes are. They're sitting there on the shelf right next to reel to reel and 8 tracks and 4 tracks. And
oh, absolutely. God. And CDs now. We don't even really use CDs
anymore.
Right.
What's anymore? A CD, right? Yeah. We don't even know what those are. And so I plugged the tapes in. I did what the man taught me to do, and it worked. Well, one of my buddies in AA we're real good friends. He had about a year ahead of me. And he's like, what's going on with you, man? He goes, you're really, you're motivated. You seem inspiring. You talk very positive. You've been working out. You've lost weight. You look good. You sound good. You started your own business. What's going on with you? And I said, well, I've been listening to this guy, this motivational speaker guy by the name of Tony Robbins. And he goes, I know who Tony Robbins is. I've got his book. He's got a tape program. And I'm like, yeah, if you go stay up at 3 o'clock in the morning, when you're getting an AA, you'd have seen it. And so I said, hey, man, if you want to borrow it, I'll be happy to loan it to you. As long as you promise me you'll go through it. He goes, yeah, absolutely, I will. So I did. I loaned it to him. And that was in like 1989, something like that. Well, 6 or 7 years later, in 1995, he calls me on the phone. And he said, hey, man, did you know that Tony Robbins is coming to town? And I said, no, man, I had no idea. He goes, oh, dude, come on, please go with me. You got me into this. Will you go with me? And I said, well, what's the date? I go, yeah, I can go. He goes, oh, fantastic. He goes, I'll take care of all the arrangements. Let me call you back. And so he calls me back like an hour later and he goes, done. We pick up the tickets at will call. Here's what they told us to do. Number one, bring a good attitude and be ready to play full out. And I said, well, Dan, how much was the ticket? He said, $695. I said, $700? He goes, yeah. He goes, you can pay me back. And I go, yeah, okay. Play full out, bring a good attitude for $700. Yeah, I'll bring a good attitude. And then he said, bring snacks because we're going to spend a lot of time in the room, which is an understatement. And drink a lot of water, hydrate. I said, okay. I'll see you then. He goes, oh, wait, I forgot to tell you the most important part. We're going to be doing a fire walk.
Did you check out right then?
I didn't even know what a fire walk was. I don't have any references for this. Kind of like I didn't know who Alcoholics Anonymous was either. But here's what I said. No. In my head, I'm going, oh, no. Oh, no. Heck no. That's not what I said. But it's a hard no for me, but I'm not saying this. I'm not, Dan, I'm just like, quiet. This is the dialogue that's going on in my head. And I'm telling Dan the opposite. I'm like, oh yeah, sure. Dan, sounds interesting. Yeah. Firewalk. Yeah. Great. All right. See you then. Well, the day comes and we get to the event and Tony takes the stage at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And the next thing I know, Tanya, it's after midnight.
Oh my goodness.
10 hours.
Right.
Day one. This is a 4-day event. It's called UPW, Unleash the Power Within, the Firewalk Experience. But I'm, again, I'm going, I'll go. I want to see Tony. I really did because I liked what I learned from him. But I'm, you know, I'm sure that, you know, these people will be over here. The intelligent people will be over here and the idiots will go do the firewalk and then we'll be able to laugh and make fun of them. At least that's what's going on in my head. And I'm what? I'm 7 years sober at this point. Got sober in 88. This is 95. And again, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Next thing I know, it's after midnight, 10 hours. And all of a sudden, Tony goes, take your shoes off. And I went, oh, no. I see where you're going with this, pal. You're not going to trick me. And then I, you know, I'm in a room with 3,500 people. Mm-hmm. And they're all taking their shoes off. And so now I've got a dilemma. What do I do? Because if I don't take my shoes off, he's going to take us all out into this big parking lot where they're going to do this firewalk. And if I go out there with my shoes on, guess what these other 3,500 people are going to know or think about me? Ooh, hey, look at the guy over there. Look tough. At the coward. You know, he's got his shoes on, right?
Tough.
So I'm like, all right, well, all right, just take your shoes off and shut up. And don't say anything. And just go hide in the back. You'll be fine.
They'll never see you.
Who's going to know? Nobody's going to know. Literally, nobody's going to know. And so that's my strategy. Well, okay, it gets worse because before he gets you going out there, as he gets you going out there, he gets everybody clapping and chanting. So now you got 3,500 people clapping and chanting. Yes, 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 right? Which is pretty intense. Well, it gets worse. Once you literally get outside, he's got African drummers. Right. Huh. So now it's dun, 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 dun. Yes. Yes. I mean, oh my gosh, you talk about a dog and pony show. Well, I'm sticking with my plan. I'm going to go hide in the back. Should be real easy to do here. Nobody's going to know. Nobody's going to find me. And well, here's what we know. Here's what I found out. Tony knows this is one of the most powerful, life-changing paradigm shift experiences in the world, period, bar none. He knows firewalk has been around 1,000 years and used by cultures all over the world, but the people in the West just don't know about it. He did. He did his research. That's why he's doing it. Well, and he doesn't want anybody to miss out because he knows it can be so life-changing. And he knows there's going to be a bunch of cowards like me hiding in the back. So what's he do? He trains people to come find you.
Ooh, so there was no escape.
There's no escape.
Kind of like the guy who showed up at 8 a.m. in the morning and said, hey, come on, let's go to breakfast.
Let's go to breakfast. Here he comes, right? And all of a sudden, here comes this guy out of nowhere, and he makes eye contact with me. I'm hiding deep in the back. And and by this time, it's already going on. People are firewalking. You can hear them screaming and yelling and celebrating. The drums are going off. People are chanting and clapping. And you're like, you've got to be kidding me. There's nothing like this on earth. I mean, it's just phenomenal. And here comes this guy and he makes eye contact with me. And I think Tony trains him. Hey, when you make eye contact with these people, don't take your eyes off him. Because he gets to me and he gets like 20 feet from me and he kind of stops and he looks at me really funny with this puzzled look on his face. And he's like, are you okay? And when we're not okay, what do we say?
I'm fine.
I'm fine. Mm-hmm. I'm good. Nothing to see here, pal. Move along. And you know, he goes right for me. He goes, so, hey, man, you going to walk tonight? And I said, absolutely not. And I said it about that tone, right? And he goes, hey, man. He goes, that's cool. We don't want you to do anything you don't want to do. And I'm thinking, okay, I like this guy. He's going to get me out of here. Well, then he asked me a question. One question. One stranger changed my life forever. Literally, I don't know who this guy is to this day, but he changed my life because the question he asked me was, well, wouldn't you at least like to watch? And I thought, sure. Yeah, let's do that. This should be really entertaining. Let's go watch these people burn their feet off. Mm-hmm. And he goes, well, listen, man, you can't see anything from way back here. He's telling the truth. I've got 3,500 people standing in front of me. I can't see anything. Logistically, mm-hmm. what's happening, they build a giant fire during the day. It's probably mm-hmm. 40 feet wide, 70 feet long. And they just throw tons and tons of cords and cords and cords of wood on this thing. And by the time it gets to midnight, it's one big giant pile of coals. It's gorgeous. Blue flame, they're beautiful. Well, logistically, for 3,500 people, what they do is they take wheelbarrows over to that pit. and they load the wheelbarrow with the coals. And then they bring the wheelbarrow back and they lay two lanes of sod on each side, which is called a fire lane, which is, you know, 3 feet wide, 15 to 18 feet long. And then they just take a flathead shovel, they sprinkle the coals on top of the grass, and that's what you walk on. Well, again, I'm in the back. I can't see any of that. I don't know any of that's going on. And so he says, well, you know, listen, just follow those people. And eventually, in other words, get in line. Interesting, right? Follow those people. And eventually you'll get up there. You'll actually be able to physically see it, which in his defense, he's congruent. He's telling the truth.
Yes.
And so I did that.
Yes.
Well, now I'm standing in line. And all of a sudden this guy comes up to me and he says, he knows when you're ready. When he says go, you go. And pew, this guy just disappeared into the night. And I'm like, what was that? Who was that? What's that about? And so now I'm kind of walking along. Again, people are screaming, yelling, celebrating, the drums, the chanting, the clapping. I mean, you know, you are so intense. It's unbelievable. And all of a sudden I get to the point, I've got hundreds of people standing in front of me. I can't see anything in front of me, but I get to a point where I can see at an angle. And Tanya, they're doing it. Every race, every creed, every color, every age, they are walking on fire. And my brain is saying, what in that is going on here? Why are they doing this? Why would anyone do that? You know, metaphorically, here, help me to understand. I don't get it. I have no references for this, nothing. It just didn't make any sense. It goes against, you know, mammals are, we're supposed to run from fire, not walk on.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So it goes against every instinct you've ever had. And I'm watching and I'm mesmerized, right? I can't take my eyes off. It's like a car accident. You tell yourself you're not going to look at it. Yeah, right. What do? We stare at it. And so that's what I'm doing. I'm just completely mesmerized. I'm in a trance and I'm walking and walking and I'm staring and staring. All of a sudden, boom, guess where I am?
I'm at the front of the line.
I'm at the front of the line. And now I'm asking myself, how the heck did you get here? And now I'm looking down at that lane, right? It's 3 feet wide, 18 feet long. And the coals are bright red glowing on top of that lane. Well, there's a wheelbarrow there too, full of coals. And so, you know, you can feel the heat coming off. So it gets real, it gets real, real fast. Well, I'm staring into the abyss and I'm so scared to death. My heart is pumping so hard and so fast. I feel like it's going to jump out of my chest. And as I'm staring into the abyss, there's a trainer standing there. And all of a sudden the trainer goes, eyes up. Like, oh, geez. Oh yeah. Okay. That's right. Eyes up. I was in a room, Tony Robbins, 10 hours. What did he teach me to do? Keep my eyes up. Okay. My eyes are up. Because that's what he tells you to do. Don't stare at what you fear. Look to the celebration end. Look to the end. That's where the reward is. And so now my eyes are up and the trainer goes, squeeze your fist and say yes. And I went, yes. And he went, stronger. And I went, yes. Well, he could tell. He knew I wasn't in a peak state. He knew I was leaving a lot on the table. So he screams at me, you know, stronger, I mean, loud. And now it's fight or flight. I screamed at the top of my lungs, yes. And he goes, go, 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 poo. I took off. Well, here's the first thing I learned about firewalking. When you take the first step, oh, you'll take the second, third, fourth. And you don't stop. And so he just stages a couple of guys at the end who lock arms. And they're like, stop, wipe your feet and celebrate. And so now I'm wiping my feet and I'm celebrating. I'm down there with 1,000 people. We're all screaming and yelling and celebrating. And all of a sudden it dawns on me. I burnt myself really, really bad. Oh. And I look at my foot. I pick it up. I look at it. And it's dirty. But there's no burn.
But it's not burnt.
It's not burnt. It's my other foot. Oh, it's burnt. It's got to be my other foot. I look at it, yeah, same thing. It's real dirty, but there's no burns. And so now exhilaration takes over. Mm-hmm. You feel like you can accomplish anything. It's like you're looking around going, where's Mount Everest? That's next. Here we go, right? I mean, literally, it's just, it changes you so fast because it takes your self-worth, your self-confidence, and your self-belief, and boom, up it goes. right? Because going into that, what did fear mean to me? Fear meant forget everything and run.
Mm-hmm.
There's other words for that too, but this is a family show. So it's forget and run. Well, as soon as you do that, you change it. What's it become? Face everything and rise. Or as we say in AA, false images appearing real. That was it. And I'll tell you where it got really, really, really interesting. And that's how I ended up on your podcast today, was the next day. This is a 4-day event. The firewalk was the night of day one. Now we're at day two, and I'm standing in a foyer with 3,500 people. And I'd never seen or witnessed anything like the connection, the humanistic qualities of everybody in my entire life. Never have. Don't know that I ever will, other than a Tony Robbins seminar, because I'm sitting here and I'm watching people and they're hugging and they're crying and they're talking and they're connecting and they're communicating and they're talking about their fears and they're talking about the firewalk. And it was just leveled up to a level unlike anything I'd ever seen or witnessed in my life. It was absolutely beautiful to watch. And to this day, I've never seen anything like it other than a Tony Robbins seminar. Well, that was it. So, cause I'm asking myself, really? So are we all getting along like this? Like we've known each other our entire lives and we didn't know who we were last night. Did we drink the Kool-Aid? Did the firewalk cause this kind of connection between strangers?
Right.
And the answer is yes, absolutely. And so I got to know one of Tony's trainers later in the event, and his name is Ted Macy. Sweet guy. Love this guy to death. And his lovely wife, Mary. They're both trainers for Tony. And I'm talking to him and we're talking about all that. And I was talking about that moment. And we got to talking about what it's like for him to be in that environment on a regular basis, right? He's in that environment 10 times a year, something like that. And I said, man, that must be great. He goes, oh yeah. It's unbelievable because it keeps you so charged and so, you know, just juiced and energized. And he goes, hey, look, see those people over there with the black shirts with the pink lettering on it? I go, yeah. He goes, they're volunteers. They're just like you. They're people who came to this firewalk and said, I want to be back in this environment. I'll do whatever I can do to do it. And so there was over 300 of them at that event. And he said, listen, man, when you go home, call Robbins Research, tell them you want a volunteer crew application. And I did that. And like 7 weeks later after the event, I got a letter in the mail and it said, Dave Alvin, congratulations. You've been selected to crew with the Anthony Robbins Companies in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Well, there I was. I got my foot in the door. And the next thing I know, I ended up working for the man and for almost 20 years. I took over all of his firewalks in 2003. He paid for my family to travel with me. So my kids got to go on the road because we were homeschooling. I met the girl of my dreams in AA at an AA dance. I was about 2.5 years sober. She was about 6 months. We broke a rule there because.
Yes, you did.
Yes, I did. You're not supposed to be dating unless you had at least a year. But here's what I did. I had 2.5 years. She had 6 months. I loaned her 6 months of my sobriety.
I hope it worked.
We had 23 years together. We had two beautiful kids. We got two gorgeous grandkids and we've maintained our friendship. We did get divorced, after 23 and a half years, but it was a beautiful life. There was no, it was all upside and, I could talk about that part of it, but it's not really relevant to what's going on here. So that was it. And once I was in the environment, and then in 2014, I'm driving down the road and Google called me and they said, are you the Dave Alvin that does the firewalks for Tony Robbins? Yeah. What can I do for you? And they said, well, if you're not under any contractual obligation or non-compete, we'd like to talk to you about hiring. I'm like, well, homeboy's a free agent. What you got? And when they, what they had is 148 executives who were graduating from a 9-month curriculum that they had been through. And they wanted to do the firewalk in the middle of the day. And then after the firewalk, they'd have lunch and cocktails. I said, I don't do firewalks in the middle of the day. I can't do them, won't do them. It's a safety issue. I got to be able to see the color of the coals. We only do it at night. However, I could do a glass walk for you. They said, a glass walk. You mean like walking on broken glass? Yeah. They said, ooh, tell us about that. So I did. And that's what we ended up doing. I actually did two glass walks for Google. And that's when I realized there was a huge, huge marketplace for incredible life-changing, paradigm-shifting corporate team-building experiences. And there was a huge market for it. And Google even verified that. It's like, oh, if anybody would know, I guess it's them. And so, yeah, so Firewalk Productions was born in 2014. And then shortly after Google, I was at NASA, Notre Dame, Virginia Tech, Microsoft, Heineken, Remax, Chick-fil-A, YMCA, I mean, the EO organization. It just went on and on and on. And the next thing I know, I'm on a podcast with Tanya. So, I mean, you know.
Well, and I appreciate that. I'm going to guess you're here because you have a loved one who is either in full-blown addiction or is looking for recovery. You're not here just to talk about chickens, which we could talk about chickens, but you're not here for that. You're here because you're at possibly where I was 12 years ago. You're surfing the internet looking for hope, looking for help, looking for a way to maintain this beloved family, this beloved marriage, this lovely child. You are looking for something. Well, stop. Stop looking. At Tanya Joya Coaching, we realize that the family is not hopeless, is not helpless, and is not powerless to help the addicted loved one get well. We fully realize that you have been doing everything for everybody and you're exhausted, even if you don't have 400 chickens. We completely understand that while this is no laughing matter, you need a little levity. You need a little joy. You need a little hope in your life. So look no further. We have an Arise from Addiction Facebook group. Or if you want to talk to me immediately and say, look, I just need help, where I was 12 years ago, surfing the internet at 3 and 4 in the morning going, I just need somebody who can tell me a story of hope. I want you to join the Rise Above Addiction Facebook group. And then I want you to reach out to hello@tanyajoya.com. It's all in the notes below. You can do this. You can make extraordinary changes. But what I understand is you're waiting. You're waiting for them to fix themselves when you can be part of the solution. So stop waiting. Become the cherished wife, not the nagging wife. Make sure that you check into our Facebook group at Arise from Addiction on Facebook. We'll look forward to seeing you there. Let me go back to something you said. Burnt or dirty, but not burnt.
Correct. No, and I didn't. Think, oh, I thought you were going to ask me if I washed my feet that night.
Probably not. It was too.
No, I didn't.
Well, it wasn't
Thank
that
you.
Night anymore. It was the morning.
In fact, I never washed them. They're still dirty to this day.
Dirty, but not burnt.
That's
and that,
right.
That I think in a way describes what the addict is dealing with, in the sense that this is not something when they hit that point of where the addiction is not working, the vodka in the bucket, where it's not working. They don't want to be there anymore. And they want out, but how do you get out? So you have a couple juxtapositions of the bucket and the bottle, and then the gun and the AA book, and then you've got dirty but not burnt. It's there are fantastic parallels going on in here. How would you say you stayed sober? What was the guiding force? Was it connection with other people? Was it the AA group, higher power? What was it that made you make that choice?
You know, the only two places I had ever felt at home was a grungy, crappy little bar in a little small town somewhere, or an AA meeting. It's the only place I ever thought I really felt that I belonged. And so when I got to AA and I felt that love and that connection and being able to help other alcoholics achieve sobriety, it was so magical to me. And then I was getting strong doses of the personal development industry at the same time. So somewhere in that first year or so, it was like, I realized that I think the two most important times of my life was the moment I was born and the moment I figured out why. Because if you help enough people get what they want in life, you'll always get what you want. It's universal code. AA proves that to you, right?
And Dave, I really appreciate you being on the podcast. And the main question that I work with folks who are dealing with persons who are either moving towards recovery or in recovery is, how do I help? What do I do to help? So based on your experience and walking with a lot of others down this road, what would you say is the best thing for a loved one, a family member, somebody to do to help that person in recovery?
I think number one, get some help. Don't go at this alone. And don't take on any of the guilt or the blame or the game of all that. Alcoholics and drug addicts have a tendency to want to blame everyone around them and not take responsibility for their own actions. And that has to happen. Or recovery is not going to take place. So there's all kinds of support groups out there. You've got Al-Anon for the spouses and for the brothers and sisters or anybody that's dealing with anybody that's an alcoholic or a drug addict. They also have Alateen, which is the kids for, you know, teenagers and the younger kids that can deal with parents or anyone that they're dealing with that needs to put the plug in the jug, so to speak, from that standpoint. And again, you know, guilt is a big part of this. And so I wouldn't take any of that on, if at all possible. Because, you know, again, and I say this all the time, you're not dealing with a bad person who's trying to be good. You're dealing with a sick person who needs to get well. And that transformation part takes a while. Because again, when people are screaming and yelling at you and, you know, and they're throwing things and they're carrying on, you know, you want to take that on. And it's literally one of the worst things you can do. I practice something called the Ho'oponopono. You may want to put that in the show notes or something if you want to, Tanya. And it's and it's an Hawaiian forgiveness and reconciliation prayer and process. And it uses the 10 most powerful words on earth, which are, thank you. I'm sorry. I love you. Please forgive me. So if you take those words, right, and you apply that to just about anything that's going on in your life, extremely powerful. Hawaii know that prayer really well because they teach it to their children. And I've been using that for 20 years and it's super, super powerful.
Can you, Dave, spell how you find that?
Yeah, Ho'oponopono is H-O apostrophe. Uh-huh. Apostrophe. Uh-huh. Ho'oponopono. So it's Ho'oponopono. Ho'oponopono.
Got it. And it's a prayer that you can repeat. You can have it on repeat on your recording on your phone. You can do all of those things.
And typically what they teach is you say that prayer three times a day. Morning, afternoon, and evening, and then you say it 10 times. So in other words, if I say, I love you, thank you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, that's one. Say that 10 times. And then in the afternoon, do it again. And then in the evening, do it again, you know, like before you go to bed. Very settling. And it basically does several things. Number one, it completely changes the frequency around you. I've literally used this on people and they were like, completely losing it, and all of a sudden they kind of click. It's like, okay, what happened? Wow. Who unclicked me from my nonsense? And just by again words, you're creating that frequency, because we know, right, we know that music and sound and all these things create vibration, and those vibrations can set a tone for anything that we're dealing with. And this is without a doubt one of the most powerful, probably powerful things I've ever learned, is that Ho'oponopono. Super powerful.
So parents and spouses and brothers and sisters and all those people around that person can say that too, because as we talked about, the family's not innocent of all of this. They have contributed in their own particular ways to what's going on, and they need to get healthy too. So it sounds like this is something the whole family can participate in.
Everybody can. You can have a quiet moment and they all repeat it. And it sets a tone, it sets a vibration. It creates a boundary, if you will, between everybody, because now it's about those. I mean, think about how often you could use those 10 words every single day of your life. How often do we need, sorry, please forgive me, thank you, I love you. Such power. And again, they're probably the most 10 powerful words on earth. I mean, you can see my shirt here. I got my flaming feet, you know, for my.
Oh, nice.
I wish you could see my back. On my back in Japanese calligraphy, I have what I believe the two most powerful words on earth, and that's love and gratitude. And so those words are on my back, pushing through out through the front of me. Dr. Masaru Emoto was the guy that took a droplet of water, and he wanted to create a snowflake, and he found out that he could influence the snowflakes with words and music and intention and everything else. And so if you look at his work, the most beautiful snowflake that he ever took a picture of, it's just gorgeous. The geometrical shape of it was with those two words, love and gratitude, right?
Awesome.
I mean, easy for us to believe that if you take a plant and you set it on a speaker and you play Bach and Beethoven and beautiful music, what does it do? The plant flourishes. Well, it's the words that do the same thing. So that's why I literally put the Japanese calligraphy here on all my shirts, so that all my crew and people that I'm involved with, I have love and gratitude pushing from the back through the front of them.
So Dave, what do you recommend when each person in the family is having a hard time having love and gratitude for themselves, that the ugly words, all those things are showing up in their heads and they just want to release by blaming or getting angry or saying, if you would get your act together, then all would be well. We know that's not true.
Right.
It may help, but it won't, all will not be well. What would you suggest to that person who really has that ugly, ugly self-talk going on?
Well, then why is it going on? You know, here's one of the things we learn in AA. And that is, if you have a problem with a person, place, or thing, the problem's you. You decide. You're giving an energy. Where intention goes, energy flows. So, you know, you step back and say, what's my role in this? How have I contributed to this? What is it that I don't know yet that will make me a better person and help this friend of mine or my family member? That's never going to get you anywhere. It's going to make it worse. We all know that. And so what is it? It goes back to what a lot of what I teach, Sonia, and that is patterns. Everything we do, pattern. Overeat, it's a pattern. If you exercise, it's a pattern. If you get out of bed every morning and make your bed and get in the shower and take a cold shower, those are all patterns. And so, you know, again, when you get angry, you get frustrated. One of the greatest gifts you can give yourself is say, is take a step back and go, what's going on with me?
Yes.
Why need, you know, what do I need to look at within my own psyche to help me be more calm and more peaceful and get to a resolution with all this?
And then you can say the prayer for yourself.
I say it all the time. It's like, I'm so programmed now that when I go to bed at night, it's always the last thing. It's just ringing in my head. And the next thing I know, I'm asleep really well. And if you research this, if you go to Google and look at some of the stuff that's out there and you start to study this, you'll quickly gather the information, and it'll show you how powerful the Ho'oponopono is.
Well, Dave, I really appreciate you sharing your story with this Over on Purpose podcast. I think I mentioned one of the things that really helped me to understand what was going on both with me and with my husband and with the greater world was listening to people's stories and pulling the wisdom out of it. And you have certainly shared some fantastic wisdom. This prayer, I'm not going to attempt to say the Hawaiian words. This prayer will be an action step that we'll post down in the podcast. And I really appreciate your time, especially as the audience can see, we had to stop and re-record some of this because I had some technical difficulties. So Dave, thank you for your gift of service. I know that's a big step in AA, and it helps keep all of us sober to keep helping other people come into their own truth, come into their own understanding of what's important for them. So thank you again for your time.
Yep. And I'll say this last thing, and it says right in AA, when anyone anywhere reaches out, I want the hand of AA to be there. And for that, I'm responsible. And I took that to the bank. Thanks, Tanya.
Thank you, Dave.
You, beloved listener, are creative, resourceful, and whole. Do you want to add more purpose to your sober journey? Do you want to make room for the new and make your dreams a reality? Apply today for a dream session. Go to tanyajoya.com. That's TanyaGioia.com and apply today. Let's get you dreaming about your new purpose.